Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University and is a licensed chiropractor with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School and the clinic director at the Premier Center in Santa Monica, where he treats many famous names in Hollywood under nationally recognized Premier Labs owner and CEO Dr. Robert Marshall. Got a health question? Ask Dr. Medici live today on Straight Talk on Health. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. We're going to learn today. That's what you like to do. That's what you keep telling me. I'm going to keep feeding it back to you, all you can take. Today, we attack the carbohydrate. I've been waiting for this day. You haven't, because your breakfast is going to change drastically after today's show. But I don't want to rock the boat now. If you already enjoy great health, you love your food choices, I'm going to leave you alone. But if you are confused about what to eat, how to eat, why to eat, when to eat, how to buy, and when to buy it, then this show is for you. Now, if you're of the opinion, and too many of you are, that you can eat whatever you want because you take digestive enzymes and hydrochloric acid, and that exonerates you from good food habits, well, that's heresy. You twisted things a little bit. Do not think that way. There is no substitute for smart food choices. My patients tell me they're confused about food just as often as they tell me they feel confident that they eat correctly. But even the ones that say that, when I get them into my office and I talk to them, they're still making all the big mistakes. Very few topics are more confusing to the public. And not enough time is spent. Shows don't spend enough time teaching people to eat. I think I'm going to start an educational series that, of course, I'm going to tie into straighttalk.cc so you guys can get the food straight, because I have tried everything, been in the trenches with lots of sick people, and the conclusions I've drawn stand the test. You see, they're not theoretical. They come from clinical experience. I find this to be a huge, huge, huge factor. You got lots of theoreticians out there and not enough doctors who've had enough guts to work with people who are truly sick. And that's you from what I hear from my call-ins. I can tell you some of the most profound healings I've shared with my patients were done, believe it or not, solely with food. That means no supplements. How's that? No herbs, nothing but food. There have been many food healers over the years also. At one time, you went to a sanitarium. They called it that. It was more or less a low-scale. Someone used food. That was Bernard Jensen, Amalirit, Pavarola, Herbert Shelton. The history of healing in this country the last 100 years is not just herbal. Now, my experience has been that herbs have a very important place. They speed up a 5-year healing into a 2-year healing. Now, I'm talking about people who are chronically ill. That may not be you, but many of you fit this pattern from what I can see. So if you can't do herbs, you can do food, but you have to master food. And then if you can do herbs, it will just speed up your time. That's why I think it's the best of both worlds. Okay, but at no time do herbs replace food. This is the mistake people make, and then they just commit all the atrocities or live in delusion as to what they think good food is, read all the conflicting articles, and get confused, written by people who don't take people out of chronic disease. You see, herbs don't possess the building blocks in sufficient quantities. Now, this is a little more involved than you might. So, if you have questions, concerns, confusions about food, if your health is compromised and money issues prevent you from buying those much-needed herbs that I would otherwise love to give you, then this is the first broadcast I've done. It'll be one of a long segment in conjunction with straighttalk.cc. Go to the website, okay, and we're going to get you food smart. All right, I promise you, remember this day on record, that the grain-based diet is going to heal. The grain-based diet. Science will kill over 20 years. Grain means corn, wheat, rye, rice, millet, spelt, which means that breads, pastas, much of the bean fare often, although not the potato often, although not always, are going to come up short in the match. You don't want to hear this. Tough, you're going to. There is too much powerful science, powerful anthropology, and powerful clinical data being compiled every day. And of course, I'm going to back myself with a book. I don't want to do the fighting, so consider this short paragraph from Jared Diamond's book, The Third Chimpanzee. Now, Jared Diamond, the third chimpanzee, took his PhD in physiology, lab physiology, in 1962. Then he got bored and shifted into anthropology. By the way, his PhD was on the gallbladder. People giving 6 years to the study of one little tubular organ. After that, he shifted into anthropology and won the Pulitzer Prize for the book, you know his name through this book, Guns, Germs, and Steel. You can't go to an airport throughout the United States and not see that book, Guns, Germs, and Steel. This book was so successful, he won the Pulitzer Prize. The book was picked up by National Geographic and turned into a multi-part series, from which he also had another blockbuster success. Dr. Diamond teaches still at UCLA. I'm going to read you a few paragraphs. Chapter 8, which he entitled Agriculture's Mixed Blessings. If this doesn't do it, then I don't know what to tell you. It changed me. It put the icing on the cake. Actually, I'm going to read this when we get back from break, so let's take a brief break. Okay, I guess we're not going to take a brief break. All right, let's read that.
Hi, my friends. This is Dr. Medici. Write this number down right now. 1-888-777-0711. That's 1-888-777-0711. That's my toll-free, super easy-to-remember phone number that allows you to get on the show with me live to get your health questions answered. That's 1-888-777-0711. I want to hear about your health concerns, your symptoms, your aches and pains, your questions about surgery, anything under the name of health that concerns you concerns me, and I'll get it handled. And if it's inappropriate for the show or we need more time, I'll finish it after the show. That's 1-888-777-0711. And if you're shy and this isn't the kind of thing you do, do it anyway. I promise I'll make it easy. That's 1-888-777-0711. Hope to hear from you. Bye-bye.
How much do we lose? Okay, I understand we had a technical problem, so I don't know how much you guys got. Patience is a virtue. All right, we're going to continue. I understand you should have gotten most of that transmission. Again, I'm attacking the carbohydrate. I've got some great backup here. I'm going to read to you Chapter 8 from Jared Diamond's book, The Third Chimpanzee. And he states, let's return to the progressivist view of agriculture. As I explained, Diamond goes on to say, at the onset of this chapter, we're accustomed to transition from hunter-gatherer lifestyle to agriculture, brought us health, longevity, security, leisure, and great art. While the case for this seems overwhelming, it is hard to prove. How do you actually show that the lives of people 10,000 years ago got better when they abandoned hunting for farming? Until recently, archaeologists couldn't test this question directly. Instead, they had to resort to indirect tests. Here's one such example of an indirect test. If agriculture had been visibly such a great idea, you'd expect it to have spread quickly, once it arose in some source area. In fact, the archaeological record shows that agriculture advanced across Europe at a snail's pace, barely 1,000 yards per year. From its origins in the Near East around 8,000 BC, agriculture crept northwestward to reach Greece around 6000 BC. Britain and Scandinavia. That's hardly what you could call a wave of enthusiasm. As recently as the 19th century, all the Indians of California, now the fruit basket of America, remained hunter-gatherers, even though they knew of agriculture through the trade with farming Indians in Arizona. Were California Indians really blind to their self-interest? Or could it instead be that they were smart enough to see, hidden beyond agriculture's glittering facade, the drawbacks that ensnared the rest of us? Another indirect test of the progressivist view is to study whether surviving 20th century hunter-gatherers were really worse off than farmers, scattered throughout the world, mainly in areas unsuitable for agriculture. Several dozen groups of so-called primitive men, like the Kalahari Desert Bushmen, continue to live as hunter-gatherers in recent years. Astonishingly, it turns out that these hunters generally have leisure time, sleep a lot, and work no harder than their farming neighbors. For instance, the average time devoted to each week to obtain food has been reported to be only 12 to 19 hours for bushmen. How many readers of this such a short work week? As one bushman replied when he asked why he had not emulated neighboring tribes by adopting agriculture, he said, "Why should we plant when there are so many mango nuts in the world?" Diamond goes on to say, "Compared to my physician and lawyer friends today, and to my shopkeeper's grandparents in the early 20th century, hunter-gatherers really do have more free time." While farmers concentrate on high carbohydrate crops like rice and potatoes, the mixture of wild plants and animals in the diets of surviving hunter-gatherers provide more protein and a better balance of other nutrients. The Bushmen's average daily food intake is 2,140 calories and 93 grams of protein, considerably greater than the RDA for people of their small size but vigorous activity. Diamond has experienced, are healthy, suffer from little disease, enjoy a very diverse diet, and do not experience the periodic famines that befall farmers. It is almost inconceivable for bushmen who utilize 85 edible wild plants. This is to die of starvation, as did about a million Irish farmers and their families during the 1840s when a blight attacked potatoes, their staple crop. Thus, the lives of at least the surviving modern hunter-gatherers aren't nasty, brutish, and short, even though farmers have pushed them into the world's worst real estate. Hunters of the past who still occupied fertile lands could hardly have been much off. You know, he's being tongue-in-cheek here, guys. If you're living in a desert and you're doing this well, what was it like 10, 12,000 years ago on extremely fertile territory? How did the hunter-gatherer fare when they're doing that well in the desert? But all those modern hunter societies have been affected by farming societies for thousands of years and don't tell us about the condition of hunters before the agricultural revolution. We can only speculate. Now, that's all changed now. This question of the hunter-gatherer and what agrarian has been answerable only in recent years through the newly emerging science. And this is why I really wanted to get you this article, guys. The newly emerging science of paleopathology, looking for signs of disease, signs of pathology in the remains of ancient peoples. In some lucky situations, the paleopathologist has almost as much material to study as does a pathologist. For example, archaeologists in the deserts of Chile found well-preserved mummies whose medical condition at time of death could be determined by an autopsy, just as one would do on a fresh corpse in a hospital.